Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 22. Today we ask, have you seen Jimmy Moore's ultimate N equals 1 ketosis experiment? Should you be concerned about mercury and fish? And are you becoming a paleo-Nazi? Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 22. I am Relentless Roger here with Dr. Colin Chant, the Caveman Doctor. What's up, man?
Doing good, doing good. Just continuing to travel. I have some hilarious stories, but I've been in 5 states in 4 days. So it's been pretty crazy. And then I go to another one tomorrow, actually in about 12 hours.
So how many states will you traverse over the course of your entire interview process?
Probably 15.
Wow. Some people don't see 15 states in their lives, man.
Yeah, it's not a cool thing right now. Maybe to do it over a year, but that's been my ordeal as of lately. I flew to Chicago for about a day and a half as well to see my brother and to get my assessment, which we'll talk about later on in the podcast. And yeah, just hilarious stuff, you know, just all the craziness with flying. Like, I flew Southwest this time. So what I do is I find the smallest person on the flight and just immediately sit down next to them. My shoulders are like a little bit wider than the chair rest. Right. So if a big person sits next to me, it's game over. And I sit on the aisle. So that means I'm getting hit by the cart every time it comes by. So I picked the smallest person who was like this 9-year-old girl. And we just had an armrest battle for 2 hours. Luckily, I had about 150 pounds on her, so I destroyed her. But, yeah, so that was like the beginning of it. Then it was just craziness. We flew around. We got grounded, 2 hours outside of the city where I was supposed to go. I ended up renting a car with a guy sitting next to me, and we drove there. He was actually a cool guy. He was reading a car magazine.
Not the 9-year-old girl.
Not the 9-year-old girl. Sorry. Then I flew again 2 days later, and this guy, it was pretty hilarious. I kept seeing him look at me, and I'm reading like, those crap we talk about, ketogenic diets, then I was reading a bunch of radiation oncology stuff, and he's reading car magazines. And I'm looking like, man, I wish I was reading a car magazine. And then
should swap with him.
Yeah. And he kept looking at my thing, and I'm thinking, what's this guy, you know, what's going through his head? We land at this other airport. I'm like, hey, man, you want to just rent a car with me? You know, I'm not going to kill you. I have an interview, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, it sounds good. And he's like, yeah, I got a question for you. Yeah. He's like, what the hell are you reading? And I'm like, man, I was wondering, I wish I was reading what you're reading. But anyway, I figured he was a good guy because he read a car magazine. I don't know if there's any rationale in that. But nonetheless, so we drive.
If we reviewed studies using that same logic, we'd be in big trouble.
I know. So anyway, it worked out. We talked about cars the whole way down. It was just hilarious. And my last, not to drag this on, my last thought, when I finally did get in to the place I needed to be on one of my wings of the flight, I went through TSA and I refuse the, I get a pat down. I refuse the radiation. Some places still use the radiation machines. And it just really made me think like, wow, I'm kind of like a freak show. Like they made me stand there and everyone passed me and everyone was so confused and TSA people were so confused and ladies like, yeah, this isn't even bad for you. It's like a bat. It's like sonar from a bat. And I'm like, yeah, actually you're wrong, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, what do you do? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a radiation oncologist. And then she kind of shut up. But I'm thinking, they're patting me down in front of everyone. I'm like, man, this has gone too far. Like Roger and I are getting crazy. And then like the most beautiful woman gets through, refuses a pat down. And they like went, or refuses to go through and they had to pat her down. And then she went over. So I was like, all right, you know what? Maybe this isn't so crazy. If beautiful women are...
Justification through the actions of beautiful women.
So we got cars and beautiful women justifying my decisions on the interview trail.
Okay.
So yeah, it was an enlightening experience. The interview was the interview, whatever. But, yeah, it was all in all, it was, interesting time. Interesting
like an
couple
adventure.
Days for me. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty big adventure. What was going on here? You're holding down the fort in Philly?
Yeah, man. Nothing as exciting as that to report. Some of the halfway results to the virtual program were coming in this week. And that's always an exciting time, especially since it is, that virtual side of things, you know, I'm used to for 3+ years working with people physically. So it's always an interesting transition, right? I care mm-hmm. and I want to make sure that these people are getting amazing results.
You care too much.
Probably.
When I visit with Roger, I could tell when people are doing well or when they're not. It's like on your eyes. I could just see it.
It's a blessing and a curse, man. I think it's funny. I always joke with my clients, the way that I eat and the way that I move, I feel like I come pretty close to optimizing both things, especially now that I'm back in my personal training, back in my workout groove. But I feel like I come pretty close to optimizing both things. Yet I know in my heart and soul that I'm taking a decade off the back with the type of stress that's going on. And there's just, I kind of wouldn't have it any other way. I'm sure maybe you could attest to the same thing going on right now.
Yeah. I mean, to a degree, there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah. To a degree, it's self-inflicted.
Oh, I would agree with you 100%. It is by choice. And so if it is by choice and you know it's self-inflicted, you just roll with it.
Yep.
And I think, my goal is to do some amazing things while I have the youthfulness.
Yeah. But it does hit some points where you go pretty nuts. Not you, absolutely. Both of us.
Absolutely. So anyway, I care a lot. I wanted these people virtually to get the same result as physically. I see them an average of, 2 or 3 times over the course of 9 weeks. And, we checked in at the halfway point, with several of them, and the measurements were awesome. They were really, really great. In some cases, I mean, I'm talking like top tier transformation results.
Nice.
And I'm seeing some happy people. I'm seeing some fulfilled people. I'm seeing some people who want to, close with a bang in the second half, and I couldn't be happier. So that's been my week. It's amidst all the craziness, you get that burst of energy, and it's a pretty cool thing.
Good stuff, man. That's good to hear. You're making me feel better now. So thank you, Roger.
Last week I was negative, right?
Yeah, you're back up now.
I'm back up.
I'm the more negative one. So this is what we do. We balance each other out.
That's right. Hey, so I did want to bring up one thing that I forgot to mention last week. We got lots of great feedback from the listeners regarding our bacon piece. And lo and behold, I forgot to mention a fourth factor of bacon. I mentioned 3 factors that I was concerned about more than, you know, nitrates and nitrites, which we said, let's just kind of leave it neutral. Cooking.
Yeah.
How do you cook your bacon? Right? I had it written down to talk about. I blanked on it. And because we did talk so much bacon last time, because it did cause such a stir in a positive way. I got a lot of good feedback on the last episode. Yeah. A lot of people who are on board with our bacon take. So that's a big plus. I want to make sure to go back and mention it. Cooking of your bacon. How do you cook it? Do you throw it on high heat and burn it to a crisp? If so, also not the best thing.
You cook it? You cook your bacon?
I do.
No, I'm just kidding. No, you're right on. Spot on. Good point. You know, don't fry it into a black charcoal mess.
Yep. I know Matt Lalonde and Rob Wolf, who does the Paleo Solution podcast. Shame on you if you don't already know that exists. Matt Lalonde, who is a Harvard professor.
He's not
a professor, yeah. but he's associated with Harvard.
He's an associate.
Biochemist or something. I don't know.
Yeah, biochemist.
General smart dude with Harvard Association.
You're a smart guy. We don't mean to.
No, yeah, absolutely not. I mean, but both Rob Wolf and Matt Lalonde slow cook and low cook their bacon. And I think that is ultimately the right move, especially if you have the time. I know on one of Rob Wolf's podcasts, he did talk about getting up, making the coffee, throwing the bacon on low and slow, and then just letting it go. You know, we're talking low and slow, like
an
apple.
You got a lot of rhyming going on right now.
maybe we'll do a paleo wrap.
Go by the bay and play with some clay. Yeah. Good stuff.
So he leaves it on, enjoys his coffee, does what he needs to do in the morning, comes back to it, has it for breakfast. If you have that kind of dedication, I mean, that is the ideal way to do it. However, if you're like most of us and you're really crunched for time in the morning, I think both you and I are, just don't char it. Mm. Period. Cool.
So what do you got? Lead us off.
All right. So I wanted to make sure today, we've mentioned this name before. He needs a big shout out today because he's been putting out generally awesome content, and it's Jimmy Moore. And he's from Live and La Vida Low Carb. He runs several awesome podcasts. Speaking of, take it away, man, real quick.
Yeah, he's interviewing me on Ask the Low Carb Experts on a Ketogenic Diet for Cancer. It's actually going to have happened by the time this is posted, but I posted it on Facebook, so I'm sure you guys have all seen it. If you were not for the live, question and answer part of it, it'll be posted on his website. So check it out.
So Ask the Low Carb Experts with Jimmy Moore.
With Jimmy Moore.
And Dr. Colin Champ talking about?
It's a listener question, Q&A. I'd give a brief synopsis on what a... Wow, there's a helicopter. I give a brief synopsis on what a ketogenic diet is and then go into a question and answer section.
I don't know.
Is this landing on your roof?
I don't know if anyone can hear that, if any listeners can actually hear that, but we joke about the police sirens that went by. That was when we were recording at your place.
Yeah.
Now we're at Relentless Fitness Studio, and we are right next to Jefferson as well, and they do have that medical helicopter that comes and goes.
So I hope whoever's
just sounded like it was landing on the Relentless Fitness roof. So.
Anyway, check it out. Hopefully that doesn't happen during the actual interview. But all right.
So anyway, so Jimmy, so check out Dr. Colin Champ, Ask the Low Carb Experts. When this podcast comes out, it will be up for, it will have already been recorded and it will be up for a listen.
Yeah, we'll link it.
Awesome. So we'll link to that. But what is Jimmy Moore doing? So Jimmy Moore is someone who is very invested in his own health. And recently, he embarked on a ketosis experiment. So right up yeah, your alley.
Good stuff.
And when we say recently, I think he's at about 100, I want to say day 160 now. But he put up some great, great posts chronicling, I think, 30 days at a time. And he does it right. This is how to do self-experimentation. This is somebody who has had maybe a few health issues, has stepped into the driver's seat of his own health, has decided to go as far as, you know, he used to use ketone strips. Mm-hmm. And then he switched to...
Novamax.
Well,
one of them, the finger stick.
The finger stick. And so he's procured these things. He's gone above and beyond. He measures his ketones in the AM and the PM and his weight, obviously. And he's put up charts of these things and he's blowing the doors open and he's saying this, I'm completely transparent here. Here are my ketone levels in the AM. Here are my ketone levels in the PM. Here's the kinds of things I'm eating. Here's the kinds of ways that I'm moving. And here are my results. And I just really admire that. I really respect that. And I think it's worth a mention here on this podcast because we always encourage people to step in the driver's seat of their own health. And so this is a model for top-notch self-experimentation.
Yeah. He's an awesome guy. And to preach is one thing, but then to actually show what you're doing and put all the results up, that's great stuff. And it makes it easier for the user and the listener as well, because as they try it, first off, it makes it easier because they know what to do, but then it doesn't discourage them because it shows that these are the ups and downs that, you know, Jimmy went through. And, it's great stuff. Props to him.
The other thing I want to mention on here, because I think it's important that we not just, do a bunch of preaching to the choir, right? Like find a bunch of stuff that we already agree with and then throw it out there and then agree with each other. And right. So I think one thing that we've talked about before is that ketosis may not be right for you if you're super intensely exercising. So I think this is an interesting N=1 because in Jimmy's last post, he does go into the fact that I don't know if it was two or three times in the week, he was doing some rock solid get after it workouts. He didn't post the protocol to it, but he termed it as, you know, heavy and intense. And he said that he was sharp. And that this was between days 121 to 150. So his body's definitely had time to adjust to this approach. And he says, you know, he feels good. He feels sharp, that he saw no detrimental effects during those workouts. So I think that's a very unique, very useful case study to have on hand that maybe says something I know that's contrary to how I feel, right? Because I've tried periods of low carb, and with the lifestyle that I lead, the workouts that I do, it hasn't yet jived with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about ketosis low carb. I'm not talking about general low carb because I still am very much on the low carb end of the spectrum. But ketosis low carb hasn't worked for me. So I think it's always interesting to see what someone else is doing and having success with.
Absolutely.
And, one thing to note that, Jimmy's biggest successes, I'm having trouble talking today.
No problem.
But one of Jimmy's biggest successes is knocking down his protein level. And so maybe that is something to try. Cause I know that when I was doing it, my protein was likely a little on the higher end.
You know, for some people going up and down right around that spot of, and the line of carbohydrates where you go in and out of ketosis.
Yeah.
And yeah, if your protein's high enough where it's going to knock you just there, like Dr. Volk talks about how, you know, if you're not using the ketones, but you're at the point where you're kind of in ketosis, so you're in low carb enough where you're not necessarily using the carbs, then you can put yourself in this spot where it's not so conducive to feeling good or working out.
Yeah.
I know myself, when I went deep, when I borderline there, it is tough for me. I don't feel as good. When I get deeper into ketosis, I was in it for 6 months and I was fine. My workouts were fine, but you got to really get into it and get, you know, what they call ketone adapted.
Yeah.
Which is what you mentioned about the strips, why he's not using the strips. And that's why when you're ketone adapted, you're using those ketones for fuel. So you're not peeing them out.
That's a perfect segue. Got a question.
Yep.
So let's just tie this question in right now. The question's from Brian, and would love your take on Jimmy Moore's journey and the ketogenic strips. Worth doing? I just do blood glucose. So Dr. Champ, what do you think?
I think Brian has it right. The ketone strips are fine in the beginning. If you're going in and out, they're definitely fine. I'm at the point now where I'll go in only for a couple of days, so I'll use the strips. But if you are deep in ketosis, you got to use Novamax is a good one. It's $20 on Amazon, maybe even cheaper. Novamax is a finger stick, so it gives you a blood glucose level and a ketone level. I like it too because it's interesting to see where your blood glucose goes. So yeah, I agree with Brian there. And for the listeners out there, yeah, if you're gonna stay in ketosis, probably should go that route because your urine strips will likely normalize. Yeah, you'll still be in ketosis. And if you're very dehydrated, the urine strips will test positive, and that will be maybe a false positive.
Okay. So overall, let's pull it back to the tangible takeaway, mm-hmm. right? So ketosis it's certainly a niche, right? It's not to say that every listener would be interested in going down this road and, you know, doing ketone measurements and that whole ball of wax. Maybe you're not a great candidate for that at this time. Maybe you're not interested in that at this time. But I think the larger view on this, the macro view is self-experimentation.
Yes.
It's wherever your attention is directed, whether it's nutrition, whether it's sleep, whether it's your movement, your exercise, whether it's your stress management, you can learn something from how Jimmy Moore approached this, right? And that it's not to say you need to be transparent and post it out to the world and get people commenting on it, but in your own house, right? Again, step into that driver's seat, have some fun, and really get to the bottom of what's going on and what works.
Yeah, and you don't have to post it, but track it.
Yeah.
That's
what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I get so many questions about, I'm doing this and I feel terrible, yet I'm eating so much. And then I tell them to track their food, you know, go to Fit Day, and it's like, yeah, you ate 600 calories. You know, yeah. I had one egg for breakfast, et cetera, et cetera. Well, yeah. Sometimes you need to visualize it in a different type of medium that does it. So,
and also, and learn something, you know, when we talk about studies here and at different times we critique studies for some of the shortcomings that they have. Like, for example, when we critiqued, Dean Ornish, right? Mm-hmm. For not controlling his study and then posting these results like they're fact. That's a problem. Same thing in these self experiments, you know, the more you can control, the better. It's not to say that you're going to isolate one thing at a time and do that for the rest of your life. But the more towards that end you can get, the better.
Yep.
You know, if you change 15 things, it's like the wiffle ball bat thing. If any of you remember that, if you change 15 things at once and you get better or you get worse, you're never going to know which of those 15 things had the biggest impact.
Track it.
Yeah. Track it. Check it out. We're going to link to Jimmy. Jimmy, congratulations.
Yeah,
we love what
stuff,
you're doing.
Jimmy.
What you got, man?
So I got a great question because I too had this question at one point. Don't have his name on me right now, so I apologize, but questioned me about carbonated water. It's on my Facebook page on Caveman Doctor. So, whether it's safe or not, a lot of people say how dangerous it is. It leaches calcium from your bones. It's kind of a general one. And actually, if you Google it, that's like the first thing that comes up. So the question is, you know, is it actually not safe? So first and foremost, the real question is why you're drinking carbonated water. If you're drinking carbonated water because it got you off of soda, that's totally fine. I got myself off of Diet Coke. I drank Diet Coke in college. I got off it through carbonated water. So if it's a factor of what you're not doing to do that instead. Carbonated water is obviously not nearly, if it is bad, it's not nearly as bad as many other things out there. So the next question is it really bad for you? So the issue I have with carbonated water and what I found with myself, when you drink carbonated water gets in your belly. So you make a little bit of acid because you think there's food in there that you want to break down. When the bubbles kind of bubble up, it puts more pressure on your stomach. So it gives it the sensation that there's food in there, which can cause excess, acid to come out, and you can get kind of reflux type symptoms. And that's what I've noticed when I drank a lot of carbonated water. I don't anymore. I will every once in a while, with my dinners if I'm feeling fancy. but that's one thing that has happened to me. So I looked up some research on this to see if this is the case, and you gotta love it. The European Journal of Gastroenterology and Hepatology actually did a study called The Effects of Carbonated Water on Functional Dyspepsia and Constipation. Dyspepsia is basically that, just heartburn, or it could be like gastric ulcer, et cetera. And they did 21 patients with dyspepsia and secondary constipation. They put them into two groups, one with carbonated water, the other one with tap water, for almost 15 days. Now, granted, it's not really a blinded study because you know the water's carbonated as it dances around on your tongue.
Oh, man.
So we're colorful tonight. So anyway, the results actually were that functional dyspepsia and constipation improved from carbonated water. It decreased satiety. And improves dyspepsia, constipation, and gallbladder emptying. So the other question
is... increased satiety?
It decreased. So that's really the other question. Did these people just eat more food and it coated their stomach? But anyway, it makes you more... So it makes you hungrier.
Interesting.
Decreases the dyspepsia per se and may help your constipation if that's going on for you.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't... You know, these studies are hilarious. I don't know if this changes your mind at all, but, you know, it may not be that bad. I personally get reflux with it, so I stopped. But I got to throw out one more study because you're going to love this one. This is in the Journal of Nutrition, which is a very good journal. A sodium-rich carbonated mineral water reduces cardiovascular risk in postmenopausal women.
Oh, man.
So
the salt.
If you do it with salt, apparently it decreased actually total cholesterol and LDL cholesterol. Obviously, we don't care so much about that. But, you know, LDL, the bad cholesterol, et cetera. Decreased it by 15%, and HDL cholesterol increased by about 9%. So it's pretty amazing. The real question is, I'm sure a lot of the women in this study, and this goes back to the first point, are drinking carbonated water instead of drinking soda, juice, you know, munching on some other snacks, because that's, you know, I have a lot of people in my family that do the same thing. So anyway, carbonated water, really no proof that it's bad. The thing about it leaching out of your bones, that's if it's acidic, which a lot of the sodas are. Like Coke, you can put one of your teeth in it, and it, after 8 hours or something, dissolves. It's that acidic. So we're not talking about that. So anyway, try to taper it down, but if you're doing it to replace another bad habit, it's probably the far lesser of two evils. So that is what I got on carbonated water. Bam.
Context matters, as always.
Context matters, absolutely.
Yep. Cool. Oh, here.
That's all.
I'm an occasional carbonated water drinker. Maybe once a month for me, honestly. Again, you know, if you're looking to get fancy and bring it on in, but you know,
gotta impress the lady sometimes. We put
nothing impresses a lady like carbonated water.
Carbonated water.
You heard it here.
Not wine, not flowers, not chocolate. Carbonated water.
Right. You'll thank us later.
We put in our NorCal margaritas too.
That's true.
All right, sorry, moving along. You got some more food takeaways?
I do. So the one of the names we brought up last week, which was Chris Kresser, Revolution Health Radio, awesome. Actually, I didn't listen to it. He puts up full, we have to get on this at some point. I got to give a big shout out to him. He puts up full show transcripts, so you could just read the show if you don't for whatever reason you can't. You can't put the headphones in. So I thought that
it's just not in our budget of
negative,
whatever.
So, that's on the list of future things to do. So, for now, we will just tip our cap to him. But, it's Revolution Health Radio with Chris Kresser. It's called The Truth About Toxic Mercury in Fish. And he brought on a guy named Dr. Nicholas Ralston, who's an expert in mercury in fish and the protective effects of selenium. And I really liked this transcript or the show because it pinpointed an issue that I feel like a lot of people, when I say mercury in fish, you're going to have an immediate opinion on that. And the conventional wisdom is that many fish out there, especially the ones like tuna and swordfish, are extremely high in mercury. and that you don't want to be eating lots of them, right? Because that could be detrimental. And that again, is the conventional wisdom going around. Dr. Nicholas Ralston would have us believe otherwise. And I thought this was really interesting. So he simplified the issue to, you know, it's not just mercury. It's not just about mercury content. It's also about selenium content. And it's about how those two interact with each other. So he has something called the selenium health benefit value, the SEHBV. And that value, it's trying to boil these levels down in a fish to show you whether it's a good fish or a bad fish. The interesting note here, when you're not talking about super predatorial fish like whales and sharks, which are very high in mercury and don't have the selenium to balance it out, if you're not talking about those types of fish, almost all fish have higher selenium levels than mercury levels. And in Dr. Ralston's eyes, that makes them okay to eat. I thought that was really interesting.
That's super interesting. We get so many questions about fish too.
Yep. And I mean, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. I'm not that familiar with his background. I'll, you know, do a little more checking up, but.
Does he read car magazines? Well, that
car magazines, he drinks carbonated water and no,
or gets the pat downs.
So the other couple interesting points in this, one, pregnant women. He basically said, you know, pregnant women can eat fish. That it's not necessarily such a bad thing, that you can avoid the whales, the sharks. You can even avoid some of the closer ratios like swordfish and the like. But that when you get into talking about your, you know, salmons and tunas and those kinds of things, those ocean fish, you're pretty safe to go. The only other thing he said, if anyone's wondering out there, the safety of freshwater fish, he said the studies they've done, about 98% of freshwater fish are a big thumbs up. And then there is about 2% that aren't, and that's because they are in ultra contaminated freshwater bodies. That's the big issue, right? Mercury gets dumped into the water, yeah, and then it, you know, moves into the fish, and then we eat the fish, and that's a problem.
Yeah, so eat your wild fish. Make sure they're wild too. But there's a point where what's left to eat, you know?
Yeah.
If you can't eat fish.
There is also, I don't know if anyone's seen it. I hadn't seen it, but just in case anyone out there did, apparently there was a Subversity article that dissed fish, and it said basically they're not as safe to eat.
Oh, I did too. As animal meat,
because of mercury content.
Yeah,
and they do go into that, and they talk about how that the Subversity article is on the right track, but it's looking at two studies that were using negative ratio fish. In other words, fish that had higher mercury content than selenium. And so because they were using just those types of fish, those big predatorial type of fish, the study was coming up negative. And so what Dr. Ralston said is he's going to actually contact them and talk to them about including different fish, more variety of fish in that study.
Nice.
So yes, anyway,
that's great. Keep eating your salmon.
Yeah, keep eating your salmon with confidence, maybe even your tuna with confidence. That's all we'll say about it here, but on the internet that we'll link to is this great episode. Again, it's Chris Kresser, The Truth About Toxic Mercury in Fish. It's long, so there's plenty to learn there if this is something you want to dig your teeth into. Just worth a mention on this podcast.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Great stuff.
I got one more.
Go for it.
And it's about protein. All right. So this is one of those studies that isn't the greatest thing. It's not the largest group. It wasn't conducted maybe how you wish in a perfect world it was conducted, but it raises a question. All right. So in this, they took male subjects. I think it was in the 20s. It was about, call it 25, right in that range of male subjects. They were all male. And they were doing some level of working out, all right? And post-workout, I think it was, for whatever reason, they were doing a lot of knee extensions. I don't know why, but that's what they were doing, all right? Anyway, that's neither here nor there. The important part of the study was participants were randomly assigned to ingest either 80 grams of whey protein as 8 servings of 10 grams every hour and a half post-workout, 4 servings of 20 grams every 3 hours post-workout, or 40 grams twice every 6 hours post-workout. And they called it, pulse was the 10 grams at a time, intermediate was the 20 grams at a time, and then bolus was the 40 grams at a time. And they tried to determine some conclusions from there. Now, the big stop sign that I'm throwing my hand up in the air. The big stop sign is no participant in the study significantly changed their body mass or body comp. So what I'm going to say next has to be taken with that as the backdrop.
I mean, if you're doing all those leg raises, I think they'd be getting yoked. I don't know.
But after that, they went into a bunch of different measures, including the one that they highlighted was net balance of protein. There's also breakdown of protein, synthesis of protein, and protein turnover. And they concluded that the intermediate approach may, in fact, be the best. Mm-hmm. So the 4 times 20 grams every 3 hours post-workout may be the best. Now, this is interesting, right? Because 10 grams is a little less than maybe you hear recommended out there. 20 grams is probably right on for a protein measurement per meal. 40 grams is obviously the extra proteins. Like, so what's most effective? It's hard to say because there were no, again, body mass or body comp adjustments made. In my mind, it raises the question. I wanted to talk about it because I wanted to get your take on it. I wanted to hear what you're doing. I'm going to say what I'm currently doing. And then I'd like to just see a longer term study. I think this is fascinating.
Yeah, it's good. It's very thought provoking. what do you do?
So post workout, I'm intaking currently about 30 grams. So I'm right between the intermediate and the bolus. Mm-hmm. And about 2 hours after that, I'm intaking another 30 to 40. And the reason I do it that way is because of when my workouts, context matters, right? Mm-hmm. So if anyone out there is looking to get a window into what I'm doing, let me give you some context. I'm working out at about between 11 and 12 o'clock, right after my morning clients are done. All right. So that's my workout window. Immediately after my workout, I have a little shaker bottle on hand. I use some whey protein. I use a little bit of kefir and I use some water and I shake that up and take it down. And again, it amounts to about 28 to 30 grams of protein immediately after my workout. Then I roll home on my afternoon break to get some work done on the home front and I pick up my lunch along the way. Usually that's where I'll intake some meat, and you know, whether it's a free range chicken, I've been partial to free range turkey at Whole Foods lately. I'll pick that up. I'll cook it up and I'll have it with some fruit and veggie. Usually I'll throw that in the Vitamix and just blend it up as a shake. And that's my meal there. And again, that's probably in the 30 to 40 gram of protein range, with all the meat considered. The reason I do it that way is because I know I won't be able to eat for the next, maybe 6 hours. So, I'm not the ideal study participant, but that is how I do it. So 30 right after, 30 to 40, 2 hours after that, halt for about 5 or 6 hours and then have a fairly large dinner, maybe with another 40-ish in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm similar. I work out after work and then I usually go back to work, but I do 40 grams before with usually a sweet potato and butter and cinnamon. And then I do 40 grams after with usually like a smoothie, fruit or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then I'll wait 2 or 3 hours and eat a huge dinner.
So you're bolus.
I'm bolus.
Bolus.
And you know, I used to in college and when I worked initially after college in med school, I did meals every 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like 40 grams of protein every 2 hours. Like I ate a lot of, and the bolus approach has worked a lot better for me. I think it makes more sense from a, evolutionary type of point of view.
Yeah.
You know, I don't.
And that's where I hesitate on this study, right? Because we need a longer term, right? Mm-hmm. But in this study, there's no change in body mass or body comp. And there are measures of turnover, synthesis, breakdown, and net balance of protein, right? But I always am of the mind, is there stuff we're not considering? You know what I mean? Is there a mechanism we're not considering mm-hmm. there? Is that an accurate measurement of exactly how effective it's going to be for the body?
Yeah, of course.
So my thought and my approach has consistently been for the last decent chunk of time for both myself and my clients. Use context first, right? If you work better with Pulse, which is those smaller servings of protein many, many, many times over the course of the day, do it. If you work best with intermediate, which is the 20 gram-ish, you know, every 3 hours, do it. If you work best with bolus, do it. But as long as it all comes out in the end, right? It all comes out in the wash in the end.
Yeah.
You're getting at the end of the day the protein content that you want to get.
Yeah, exactly.
And bolus is just working for you very well.
Yeah, it's all individualized. In the grand scheme, yeah, overall it may not matter.
Right. Overall it may not matter. That said, I'm still interested in this study done longer term to see if maybe there is that minor advantage to doing it one
do
way
it.
Or the other.
Enough talk here, tough guy. Do it. One day we'll do that. We'll do that study.
One day we're just going to do slews of studies.
Yes.
Actually, that's what the Nutrition Science Initiative is here for now.
Exactly.
We'll just tell them to do it.
Tell them to do it, exactly. They have the billions of dollars. Tangible takeaways.
It is that time, huh?
It's rock and roll, exercise.
You have to kick this off because you have the big one.
Okay.
You did an assessment.
Yeah, so I flew to Chicago, got in a car with my bro, his wife, and then his buddy. And we drove down to Indianapolis, met with Bill Hartman. So pretty cool. I was there for quite a while, but you get there. We got up 4:30 to drive down there. So that was pretty rough. You get there. He does all these measurements, takes all these pictures, takes all these posturing pictures, and, you know, gets a history on you, and pretty much in a half hour told me everything I'm doing wrong, why I'm doing it wrong, why my lower back hurts, why it's hurt for so long, this, that, and the neck. And he was spot on. I mean, it was like, you know, not reading my palm, but basically reading every asymmetry in my body and telling me why. So then they gave me a bunch of exercises. The guys there were awesome. Andrew and Zach, I worked with. Zach actually recently flew out to Rob Wolf, to his, gym, to kind of, for the gym there, they're trying to get more of that community feel. So yeah, they were cool. The guys, they knew our podcast. They listened to our podcast.
That's
was
great.
Really cool. Yeah, it was just an awesome time. And then, Bill Hartman was, the guy was just smart, very smart, very opinionated, which I like. Not too keen on physicians, which I kind of also like, to a degree. I'm critical about physicians. That's probably a better word. Yeah. And then, about a week later, actually 3 days later, he sends me the workout of all the lifts that, I should do to correct these types of things. And it's just awesome. He's really big on breathing and breathing properly. And I'll bring out some of the pointers over the next couple podcasts, but he went on about breathing, especially the belly breathing, which someone sent us a question about, you know, should my belly pooch out like I look like I'm pregnant when I breathe? And that's kind of the yoga approach, which is apparently pretty incorrect. The point of belly breathing is circumferential expansion. So it expands your lower back as well.
Okay.
The reason we don't do this, I guess, is because we sit around so much. So anyway, it was an awesome experience. I'll post a bunch of this and, I'll link this in the future. We're going to come back to this and I'll kind of let y'all know how it goes, but it's pretty amazing. You know, he remotely, just from reading some of his stuff, he's definitely been a life changer for me. So now going there firsthand, seeing how this evolves will be interesting. It's not the style of lifting that I'm used to. You know, it's not these like couple crazy hypertrophy type lifts. There's a lot of like breathing lifts, a lot of, just things to correct and, getting my body more symmetric. And I'm going to post on here one of the my final thing. I finished my workout with him, today, the workout that he sent me, not with him today. And the last lift was a farmer's walk in a suitcase carry with a kettlebell. So basically keep your shoulders back. You pick up a kettlebell in one arm and then just walk. So it's five sets of 200 feet. And just lifts like that are awesome because you can do those anywhere. You can do those outside. You can do them in your backyard.
It's a favorite, one of my favorite finishers.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. It's just a great lift. It's so easy. And, you know, you're not really going to get injured. Just make sure your posture is right and make sure you can breathe well when you do it. So this is all in that link. We'll put it in there. I'm going to try to post some pictures or videos, if not in these show notes, in the future. But, just a great, 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 great time.
That's great. It's great to hear.
So yeah, it's good stuff.
I'm looking forward to seeing the videos.
Yeah, yeah. And, we'll hopefully get some progress in there too and go from there. Some of the workouts I got to do in your gym here because I can't do it in my gym.
Bring it on, man. We'll be happy to have you.
Thanks, man. What's up with you?
So it's a great segue. It really does relate to what I want to bring back up today. We've mentioned it before on the podcast, but similar to how I personally need a reminder about this, I figure might as well revisit it on the podcast as a reminder. And that is to consistently get some semblance of variety into your programming. I know for a while, not too, too long ago, I was predominantly doing 5x5s, right? Something like that, something like the 5x5. Part of it was a time crunch. Part of it was I wanted to hit these major motions hard. You know, I wanted to raise my weight a little bit, but I kind of left it at that. And not intentionally, not consciously. I just really liked that style programming at first. I got kind of hooked on it. It worked well with my schedule. And I kind of, I forgot about it. You know, I just did it. And then one day you realize, huh, maybe I should change this up a little bit. You know, obviously as a practitioner, I want to be constantly experiencing different kinds of workouts. And so recently, I think I mentioned on this podcast, I've been pretty excited because I've given up my training responsibility to one of our newer trainers at Relentless Fitness. And it's been really enjoyable because I've been able to tell him, this is what I like to do. This is what I want to accomplish. These are motions I can't live without. And along the way, obviously I can interject here and there and say, hey, maybe do things this way or consider this or consider that. For the most part, I try and just go hands off. It's all his. It's his to do what he wants with. And I've really enjoyed the process. And I think one of the reasons I've enjoyed it so much is he's bringing great variety to the table. And not only that, not just for novelty's sake, I feel good with it. I feel like my body is sharper than it has been in a little while. I think it's going to continue to go in the same direction. And he's brought in, you know, anything from the hypertrophy style lifts, you know, standard major mass muscle groups. He's brought in some endurance, you know, more volume oriented workouts. He's brought in definitely a renewed, core and balance focus because that's some of the background that he brings. And what I've been really stoked about, I also mentioned on the show, been doing a lot of striking lately. So there's something about when you're stressed out and, you know, when you're stressed out and all that good stuff, just hitting some pads.
Nice. Good stuff, man.
Anyway, tangible takeaway is take a critical look at what you're doing in your own workouts. And if you look back for several months and you see same, 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 maybe today is the time where you think about interjecting, you know, just that little bit of variety. Throw your body off a little bit.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, right on. I mean, that's pretty much what the experience was for me as well. Yep. Down in Indy. So good stuff.
And now you're going to be carrying lots of suitcases.
Exactly.
See that? You could do your suitcase walks while you're headed to your interviews.
In the airport. There we go.
Yeah. And they'll say, why are you carrying 100 pounds of bricks in the suitcase? And you say, Bill Hartman told me to.
That's Bill Hartman.
Yeah.
good stuff, man. Love it. My diet tangible takeaway. So I've been so big the last couple of weeks on having your own butcher, having your own farmer, having your own all these things. I recently obviously was in Chicago visiting my brother, and so he loves his butcher, so he took me to his butcher. And it's called Chicago Butcher and Larder, and the place was just out of control awesome. I got a couple of pictures. You go there, there's like a pig just sitting out there that they're kind of cutting up right in front of you. They use all these crazy different cuts, and the guy there was just so insightful, and he said, you know, why don't you try a baseball steak this week? And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. What's a baseball steak? And he kind of went through the whole evolution here of filet and how people love filet and these other cuts because they're a lot more soft and tender. And then kind of the cheaper cuts, which would be a baseball steak, which is the top sirloin. They're not as tender per se. You have to kind of braise them a lot more to let them break up. But then when cooked right, you're saying the meat falls apart. Well, first and foremost, it's very cheap. These are a cheap cut because they're not that tenderloin type, filet type thing. But he was saying these are muscles on the cow that work a lot harder. So they're much tastier. There's more lactic acid that builds up in them. There's more mitochondria. It's kind of be like a dark meat versus a white meat type thing for chicken. This is what he was telling me. He seemed to know what he was talking about.
Did he read Car Magazine?
I was just going to say, I think he reads Car Magazines. And he did have a carbonated water in his hand. No, but so then he was telling about this, and I never even thought about getting a baseball steak. I get the same damn cuts all the time. And they're called a baseball steak. They look like little discs. And when you heat them, they're 2 inches thick, excuse me, at least. When you heat them, they kind of ball up and look like a baseball. And they were...
I was going to throw in a sports joke.
Yeah.
I think there's a reason why you haven't eaten a baseball steak.
Yeah.
There's no good baseball being played in Pittsburgh.
Oh, snap.
See, that's, I got you in baseball, man. Now I found it. The Phillies have a championship.
There's no more room for all those Super Bowl trophies that we have.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got ours in 79.
Fair
enough. Bill Mazeroski. All right. So anyway, so I looked up a pretty awesome article from Steak Enthusiast. It's literally like five sentences that talk about baseball steaks, but my favorite is yours can be served. They say yours can be served with or without bacon. But really, when there's a choice, do you really say no to bacon? So that was a decent article. There's another article in here from Boudel Meetup, which I don't know what that is, but they go through all these different cuts and they call, you know, the whole sirloin top butt and say how it's cut apart and just kind of gives you some input on a bunch of different cuts. And it really, this was great. Really, really made me want to expand my horizons here. And these cuts were very cheap, a fraction of what I pay for some of my other cuts. So this is just one more of those benefits why being friends with your butcher, you know, having your personal guy to kind of give you points. And the guy obviously really cared and he had a relationship with my brother. The interesting thing is he gave him a couple cuts and was like, no, don't bring that home to your wife. She's not going to like that one. Do this. So yeah. It's pretty amazing. So it's good stuff. I bought a t-shirt there too. So
that's great. Make you an instant connoisseur. Right?
Yeah. Right.
That's the other thing. I mean, not only will you maybe get some deals and they'll have your best interest in mind, but you're going to learn a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's fun, right?
Yeah, so it made it very fun. I mean, we got on bikes and rode across the city to go there. It was a good time.
Sounds good.
Good stuff.
All right, nutrition. I got a great question this week within one of my transformation groups, and sometimes I like to pull those out and use them as topical matter. And the question went like this, you know, hey, it's the fall right now, and it's getting to be the end of, you know, let's say local apple season. What should I do about fruit in the winter? You know, what fruits are on, what fruits are off limits, and how should I proceed? And I said, you know, something we've also talked about a lot is seasonality. And I wanted to reframe. I said, let's reframe the question a little bit. It's not necessarily that you need to keep looking down fruit road all winter long. If you eat seasonally, there obviously wouldn't be a lot of fruit growing in the winter. Instead, there would be things like squash, maybe some sweet potatoes and, some little bit of vegetation, those dense leafy greens, maybe. Stuff like that. So I said, it's not to say that fruit's off limits, right? I just don't say that, you know, there's a time and a place for it. Even in the winter, you know, you could definitely have some fruit. But if you're looking macro at the whole winter season, maybe consider it as the season where you eat the least amount of fruit. And then the spring, summer, you know, when the fruit's blooming and all that good stuff, maybe that's when you would eat the most amount of fruit. So, again, consider seasonality, use it as one of many factors when you're selecting your food, and maybe try as a fruit replacement over the winter some of those things that are growing, like the squashes.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Or just get your Novamax and go ketotic. But
strip it all out.
No, it's good stuff. Are we at that point?
It is Caveman Corner time.
So my caveman corner, I'll be brief here because I could talk about this forever, but it's avoiding becoming a paleo-Nazi. And what I mean by that is basically we're all crazy. Roger and I are crazy. We're all crazy in our own little ways. But there is a point where you kind of have to draw the line. If that craziness is causing stress in your life, causing you to miss meals, causing you to be tired or not get enough sleep or do other things or, you know, impair your job or your family relationships, you got to draw the line. And you know, I use whey protein. Roger, you use whey protein. I get some emails every once in a while saying they can't believe I'm doing that, et cetera, et cetera. I get emails about the cheese too. And I eat a lot of, not a lot, but every other week or so I'll get some unpasteurized cheese. And my point is you gotta draw a line in the sand. There's a point where there's certain things that are never going to be okay. So like high fructose corn syrup, sugar, grains. You know, bread, pasta, these kind of things. If you eat them every once in a while, that's a different story. But to make them a part of your diet, like that's obviously not the basics of paleo or low carb. Then there's the gray area where some people are fine with, some people are a little crazy with, and you could be a little bit too like laissez-faire about it. If you're eating whey every meal throughout the day, that's a bad idea. But like you said, if you're trying to fit in a meal before your workout or whatnot, I mean, I get to work usually 7:30. I work straight till about 5:30 or 6. I run to the gym for an hour, and a lot of times I go back to work for 2 or 3 more hours. So if I'm not getting whey protein in before or after my lift, half the time I'm not getting anything in. For lunch I had a cultured yogurt today with whey protein in it, which is not an ideal lunch for me at all. But if I didn't eat that, that meant I wasn't eating from 7 in the morning till 6 at night. My day would have been terrible. I would have been crabby to my patients. I would have felt like crap, and I would have been stressed out all day. So you just got to draw the line. It's easy to sit there and say, you know, you got to eat this. You got to eat whole foods. You should have a whole chicken every lunch with organic spinach and blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's a point where you can become so nuts where it actually you're working backwards. You know, if you're just sitting around and you're eating whey protein shakes or you're breaking the rules in that regard, that's a different story. But if it's going to make your life at that point a lot better, a lot less stress-free, then, you know, sometimes I think it's okay, especially the gray area of foods.
Absolutely.
And if you're arguing over that minutia, making these educated decisions where is a good source to whey protein good or bad, blah, 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 you're in a good spot. You know, if you're having trouble getting rid of the foods that are temptations, that's a different story. You know, that's going to require a little more work.
My biggest thing is just eat consciously. That's my big message.
Yeah.
Just eat consciously. I don't care if you have a piece of cake at your wedding. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't. I have more power to you. Hats off to you. At someone else's wedding, at your kid's birthday party. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These kinds of things, if you do it consciously, knowing that what you're eating isn't necessarily the best thing, but who cares? I'm going to enjoy it in the moment and then get back to living the way I want to live. That's cool. You know, if you're in a rush and you have to go home, like you said, and eat some cultured yogurt and whey protein, you're doing it for a reason, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And along those lines, the whey, I've been trying to upgrade my whey because I used MRM, the all natural. They're all natural whey, and it's not the best source. It's not bad, but I've been looking at some of the other grass feds. I got this stuff True Whey by Source Naturals, which I like. It's about a little less than double the price of MRM, but man, there are some ripoffs of whey protein out there. The price goes through the roof.
Yeah, it does.
They add coconut powder in and they charge you 40 more bucks or probiotics, which are pennies on the dollar. It's just out of control. And that's been my big, worry as of lately. Like, where do you draw the line? I'm not going to spend, you know, $80 for 20 servings of protein, of 10 grams of protein.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is my caveman corner.
I like it.
Thanks.
Relentless report. Early. So, the holidays are coming, right? And we're starting to get into that string of weeks, you know, right before Halloween where, it's the calm before the storm. And when November and December hit, all of a sudden stuff starts happening. And you start to worry about those family events and you have the company parties and you have your friends' parties and then New Year's. And I mean, you could have 15 different events from November through January easy on your schedule. Mm-hmm. Just depends on, you know, what you know, how many you like to attend. So I want to ask you now, during the calm before the storm, what do you want out of your holiday season? I think it's really important. I'm beating the drum. I want you to consciously make decisions for your own personal benefit. So rather than wait until you're in it and you're at your boss's holiday party staring down a tray of cookies with someone handing you wine and all sorts of amazing stuff, that's not the best time to make that decision, right? The best time is now. Calm before the storm. What do you want out of your holiday season and how are you going to manage it to get what you want out of it? One of my favorite strategies for the holiday season is not to set these crazy goals to improve physique. It's instead, maybe the holiday season is a time to break even, you know? Maybe it's a time to enjoy a few things that you wouldn't otherwise enjoy, but put your own personal rules in place so that you don't go overboard. Because I know if I rewind the tape, which we always like to do, right? We like to look back at past versions of ourselves. But if I was looking back 10 years ago, I see someone who would plow through holiday. I mean, I'm talking live those parties up, you know, all the family stuff, be throwing down desserts, you know, all that good stuff. And then January, by the time my birthday would roll around in January, I'd have that slice of birthday cake or maybe three. And I would say, wow, did I just mess myself up for the last 2 months?
It's like doing a hard stop before the storm even happens. I love it.
Absolutely.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So I'm just at this day and age, the point in my life I am, I'm no longer interested in looking back at the end of January and saying, oops, I just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Because it takes time. It takes a lot of time. I guess as you get older too, it takes more time to get over the damage that you've done. I just don't want to say oops anymore. And so that's something that I'm thinking about now, so that when all those parties hit, that I can live it up where I want to live it up, but that overall I'm sticking to my guns.
Roger, you're such a positive guy. No, that's great. You're right on. I love it.
And I think that's that.
That is that. What number was this?
22.
22 in the books.
In the books.
Yeah.
You're at a loss for words. No. Did you have some carbonated water before you came here?
I think so. I am traveling the next couple of days as well, so I'll keep you all posted. But yeah, everyone have a good week, and keep the questions coming in. And yeah, if anyone has any good, cheap, but good sources of whey, post them in the comments.
Yeah.
There's just so many out there. It's hard navigating. I get a lot of emails about it too. It's frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, there are those that are, there's no question that there are quality sources out there, but like you said, there are quality sources that cost an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
And, it does get a little crazy here and there. Everyone, we'll work on it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. So this man is Dr. Colin Champ, the Caveman Doctor. You can find him on cavemandoctor.com. I am Relentless Roger, relentlessroger.com. You can listen and comment on either of those sites or both of them. And iTunes. As always, we are on iTunes. All the episodes are up there. So take a listen, drop us a review, and definitely shoot us a question for next time.
Have a good week.
Have a great one.